time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are setting our course for the Honduran coastline, and we're zooming right in on the colon department.
Mm-hmm.
We got a fantastic listener request asking us to really synthesize the geography, the profound history, and I mean, it literally dates back to the moment Europeans first touched the American mainland.
It really does.
And the modern economic profile of this, well, this incredibly complex region.
It's a great topic.
We have a pretty dense stack of sources for this deep dive. We've got everything mm-hmm. from statistical census data, GDP estimates, all the way to, you know, historical accounts of global significance.
Yeah.
So our mission here is to give you a shortcut to understanding this place that's defined by both its colonial namesake, Christopher Columbus, and a really vibrant non-colonial heritage. Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of a place that is just so much more than its surface area suggests. You know,
right.
Colon isn't just an administrative line on a map. It's a historical flashpoint. Oh. It really forces us to look at Central American history through this dual lens.
The dual lens.
Yeah, balancing those ancient colonial roots with its modern status as one of Honduras's 18 departments, a status it officially got back in 1881. The past here is just, it's essential context for everything.
And we should probably ground ourselves geographically, like right away. The department's capital is the historic port city of Trujillo.
And Toco,
exactly. That's the other major urban center. They really anchor the region, both historically and economically. Okay, so let's unpack the sheer physical scale of the place.
Okay.
And immediately we run into a fascinating discrepancy in the source material.
We do. When you look at the official figures for the department's total surface area, our sources give us two different numbers.
Yeah.
One is 8,276 square kilometers, and the other is 8,875 square kilometers.
That's a difference of nearly 600 square kilometers. That's that's pretty significant.
It's huge.
It's a great example of how data compilation works, right? Especially for a coastal region. You might be wondering why the numbers vary.
And it could be a number of things. Differences in cartographical methodology, maybe recent coastal erosion.
Or even just slight disputes over administrative borders, especially around those remote rainforest areas. It's a good reminder that even geographical facts are, you know, subject to human interpretation.
Absolutely. But regardless of the exact measurement, we know the area supports a pretty significant and growing population.
Okay, so let's talk demographics.
The data shows a really clear growth trajectory. If you go back to, say, the 2007 estimate, the population was around 284,900 people.
Right.
By the 2013 census, that number had climbed to 319,786.
And using that lower surface area measurement, the 2013 figure gives us a population density of about 38.64 people per square kilometer. So not densely packed by global standards, but...
No, but it's a steady growing concentration of life right there on the Caribbean coast.
And all that is managed through a pretty localized administrative structure.
It is. The department is divided into 10 municipalities and 127 villages. It really shows how important local governance is for managing the resources and, well, the diverse populations of the region.
And just for clarity, those 10 municipalities are Belfate, Bonito Oriental, Iriona, Limon, Sapa, Santa Fe, Santa Rosa de Juan, Sanaguera, Tocoa, and of course, Trujillo.
Mm-hmm.
This whole area sits right around 15 degrees, 55 minutes north, and 86 degrees west. And that specific stretch of coastline is precisely where the department's name, Colon, first. Well, it anchored itself to the New World way back in 1502.
And this is where the story gets really foundational.
It really does. Colon is, of course, named after Christopher Columbus, or Cristobal Colon. But the history attached to that single moment, that naming, is just massive. It shaped the entire region for centuries.
Indeed. The historical anchor point is, I mean, it's monumental. It set a precedent for European religious and political claims in the whole hemisphere.
And Trujillo, the capital, was the actual site of it.
The actual site of the first recorded Catholic Mass held on the American mainland. This was in 1502, during Columbus's fourth and final voyage, right when he reached the Honduran shore.
Wow. Well, Let's just put that into perspective for you. We're not just talking about some colonial town. We're talking about the site where the religious foundation of an entire continent was symbolically laid.
Yes.
That is an enormous historical weight for one single location to carry.
It is. But what's so vital for understanding Colon today is that the department is absolutely not only defined by this colonial history.
Right.
The sources all highlight that beyond the historical forts, Colon is famous for its pristine beaches, its expansive rainforested national parks. It's defined by its nature just as much as its history.
And culturally, that combination creates a really rich tension.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the legacy of Columbus, but then counterbalancing that, Colon has a substantial Garifuna population.
Which is such a crucial layer to peel back. The Garifuna are descendants of indigenous Arawak and West African people. Their lineage doesn't trace to Columbus at all, but to a completely different, resilient narrative of freedom and cultural maintenance.
So it's a counter-narrative living right alongside the colonial one.
Exactly. The Garifuna presence provides this rich, powerful, and importantly, non-colonial layer to the department's identity, their language, music, their culture. It's all vibrant. It creates an identity that exists parallel to, and maybe sometimes in subtle resistance against, that overwhelming history of the 1502 mass.
So Colon's identity is kind of intrinsically fractured.
Between the history of the conquerors and the history of those who resisted, yes.
That blending of cultures.
Really?
It's what makes the region so compelling. But we do have to talk about the physical remnants of that colonial era, specifically the Fort of Santa Barbara. What was its strategic importance? Why does it still loom so large?
Well, the fort was originally a Spanish colonial construction. It was designed to protect the port of Trujillo Bay from, you know, rival powers, pirates.
The usual suspects.
The usual suspects. But its lasting notoriety isn't really tied to the Spanish crown. It's tied to a moment of intense U.S.-Honduran friction in the mid-19th century. And it involves a truly infamous figure, the American filibuster, William Walker.
Okay, the term filibuster can feel a bit obscure today. No. He wasn't just a mercenary, right? That's too simple.
It is. Walker was an adventurer who led private military expeditions, which were illegal under U.S. law, by the way, with the specific goal of seizing control of Central American nations. He even installed himself as president of Nicaragua for a while.
Wow.
His goal was deeply political. It was all tied to this expansionist, you know, manifest destiny ambition in the U.S. He wanted to create new English-speaking colonies in Central America.
And crucially, he also tried to reverse local anti-slavery laws to get support from the southern U.S.
Exactly. So he was viewed by many in the region as this incredibly dangerous foreign despot trying to undermine their sovereignty. And this ambition, this illegal intervention, ultimately brings him to Colon. The Fort of Santa Barbara becomes the dramatic backdrop for his final act.
Correct. After repeated attempts to gain control, Walker was finally captured, and in a really significant display of Honduran sovereignty, he was tried and executed.
By a firing squad.
By a Honduran firing squad at the fort in 1860.
And that gives us the powerful, specific anecdote for you to carry forward. William Walker's remains are actually buried in Trujillo's graveyard.
It's a very tangible link, isn't it, between 19th century U.S. expansionism and the defense of Central American independence.
So that makes you wonder, right? Why does the burial place of a failed foreign adventurer remain such a prominent, defining fact in a department's history more than 160 years later?
Because Walker's story crystallizes this enduring theme of geopolitical entanglement, of external interference that has shaped Central America for centuries. His tomb is a silent, permanent monument to resistance against that foreign control.
That historical resonance is clearly still echoing. But if that's the heavy historical weight Colon carries, we need to know what that means for its actual operations today.
Right.
Let's leap forward from 1860 and focus on the modern statistics, the economy. How is the department actually functioning in the 21st century?
Well, the economic snapshot, based on 2023 estimates, it suggests a pretty robust developing regional economy.
Okay.
We can look at two key metrics. First, the nominal gross domestic product, or GDP, was estimated at about $1.0 billion.
And the second metric, which we always want to look at, is the purchasing power parity, the PPP GDP, which adjusts for local prices. It gives a much clearer picture of what that money can actually buy inside the department.
Exactly. And the PPP GDP was estimated at $2.0 billion.
So double.
Double. What's fascinating here is that 100% difference. The fact that the PPP figure is double the nominal figure tells us that the cost of living, local services, they're significantly lower compared to international standards.
So your money goes twice as far.
It goes twice as far internally, which reflects a strong, efficient local economy.
And if we break those figures down per person, the per capita nominal GDP was $2,500, while the per capita PPP GDP was $5,200. These are the current snapshots of wealth in Cologne.
And politically, the department is actively governed. The sources confirm the current governor is Ixer Barahona, serving from 2022 to 2026, representing the Libre Party. It just shows a functioning contemporary political structure operating in an area defined by all these colonial ruins.
The economic data looks pretty promising, but the real measure of success is often, you know, the quality of life. And that brings us to the Human Development Index, or HDI.
Right, which combines that economic stability with crucial social factors like health and education.
So what's the number?
The HDI for Cologne in 2021 was measured at 0.599. That score classifies it squarely in the medium development category.
Medium.
But the ranking provides the real context. This 0.599 score ranks Cologne 7th out of the 18 departments of Honduras.
7th out of 18? That's actually quite strong. It places Cologne firmly in the upper half of the nation's departments.
It does.
But I have to ask, if the PPP GDP is $2 billion, suggesting a relatively healthy and efficient local economy, why is the HDI score only 0.599, you know, firmly in that medium category? What might be pulling those crucial social metrics down?
That is a fundamental question for understanding modern Cologne. The economic output is clearly there. But the HDI points to structural challenges, often in the social components.
So education, health.
Exactly. The education and health metrics might be lagging behind the pure economic output. It suggests that while money is being generated efficiently, the infrastructure or maybe the distribution of services needed to translate that wealth into long-term human development.
Like building fully equipped hospitals or high-quality schools.
Precisely. That still requires significant investment. The ranking is good, but the overall score shows there's still substantial room for social progress.
That synthesis is just invaluable. We've managed to cover a tremendous amount of detail here, traveling from the moment of European contact all the way to the dynamics of 21st century national rankings.
It's a lot to unpack.
Let's do a quick recap of the key knowledge nuggets. We started with that geographical data discrepancy and confirmed the 10 municipalities. Then we traveled back to 1502.
A monumental year.
Yeah.
The first Catholic mass on the American mainland in Trujillo.
Then we recognize that critical counter-narrative, the resilient Garifuna culture, and, of course, the grim, unforgettable political execution of the U.S. filibuster William Walker at the Fort of Santa Barbara in 1860. His remains still mark the local graveyard.
And we closed with the modern metrics.
Yeah.
That powerful $2.0 billion PPP economy and the 0.599 HDI score, placing Cologne 7th nationally.
Right.
So the department's identity is really defined by these historical flashpoints, the claims of Columbus, the interference of the filibusters. Yet it's fundamentally anchored by a strong, independent Garifuna culture and an economy that places it firmly in the upper half of its national peers.
Which brings us to our final thought for you to carry forward. Considering Cologne's absolutely pivotal role in the very establishment of European presence on the American mainland.
The site of the first mass.
How much does that enormous, complex, historical weight and the legacy of external figures like Columbus and Walker, how much does that continue to influence the department's contemporary development? Does carrying the history of foundational colonial contact accelerate progress, maybe because of early infrastructure? Or does it impede it due to deep, unresolved geopolitical and structural inequalities, given its current rank as 7th out of 18 in human development?
It's a great question.
Something to mull over as you explore the sources yourself.
Whether you're gifting, decorating, or treating yourself, Lowe's December Deal Drops are here to help you save more all month long. Get up to 50% off select holiday decor. Plus, get up to 45% off select tools and accessories. Shop new December Deal Drops every week this month and get so much more out of your holidays. Lowe's, we help you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last.